It is November 18th, and I am I'm Anna Romsgodek from the Cooperstown Graduate Program, and I'm going to be interviewing Karen Katz, who lives in Cooperstown. How are you this morning, Karen?
I'm great.
Good. So I'm going to just start off with a pretty simple question. Tell me about growing up in Niskayuna.
Oh, so it was a really nice place to grow up, upstate.
Mm-hmm.
There were a lot of scientists from GE who lived in Niskayuna, so the people tended to be very above average in terms of smart. And that's a big generalization, but it's kind of true. So there was a brilliant man who lived down the street who actually discovered the Big Bang Theory, and there were kind of extraordinary people all over the place. Maybe that was who my parents hung out with, but it seemed like just even in school with my friends and their parents, people were quite interesting. Actually, there was a Nobel Prize winner who lived up the street as well. So it was kind of extraordinary.
Okay.
And growing up there was just great. It was, you know, it's a beautiful place. Lots of apple trees. It's right on the Mohawk River. And we hiked a lot and did a lot of outdoors things. At the same time, I felt sort of like I didn't fit in, and it wasn't until when I was a little bit older and I went to summer camp up in Maine and met all these people who were from the city and the suburbs of New York that I realized, oh, those were my people. And no wonder I didn't really quite fit in upstate, because I'm probably more of a city person.
All right. So you mentioned that you kind of found your people when you went to summer camp, and most of them were from downstate.
Yes.
New York City. So
yes.
Tell me a little bit about New York City then. Because I know that you moved there at one point in your life.
I did move there at one point. Well, both of my parents are from around the city, so I think they brought that sensibility upstate with them. You know, it's kind of obvious that they were not originally upstaters. It was obvious to me. I don't know. I don't know, Anna. I can't really put it into words. I'm sorry.
Well, that's okay. Don't worry.
Okay.
So, when you did move to New York, what did you do there?
Well, I moved to New York in the early 80s after I graduated from college. And I looked for a job in journalism. That was very difficult to find. So I found a job in publishing. And I worked at a trade magazine. And I was an editor at this trade magazine. It was over by the UN. It was on the Upper East Side, and it was great. I loved living in the city, and I loved working in the city. I made really good friends. The job was fine. It was kind of like a little bit brainless. It wasn't my dream job or anything, but I was being paid to be an editor in the city, and that was thrilling. And I had a lot of friends there. And then while I was there, I took a job at Billboard Magazine freelance proofreading, because they paid $12 an hour, which was enormously a lot of money. So I would finish my regular job, take the subway downtown, because they were near Wall Street. They were actually like all the way downtown near the seaport. I would take the train down there and I would work for probably till midnight, and then I would take the subway back home. And then I found out that my company would pay tuition if I went to school. So I went to NYU, this all at the same time, went to NYU and got a degree in magazine publishing after work. So it was very exciting, and I was busy all the time. I didn't really have extra money for anything, but loved living in the city. On Tuesday nights, there were paid by donation nights at museums and stuff, so you could go and just give a couple of dollars and go into all the great museums. So there were lots of just endless things to see.
Okay. How did you meet your husband?
I met Jeff at a New Year's Eve party. The story is this. I was living and working in Westchester. There was a publishing house in Westchester. I think I told you about it. It was it used to be a big old country club, big Tudor mansion, and it was a really fun place to work. And I had enough of the city at that point, and so I moved up to Westchester. Had my first apartment by myself, a little garden apartment with a bathroom and a refrigerator that I didn't have to share with anyone. So it was completely thrilling. I had a car, I had a job. Tell me if you want a napkin or a spoon or anything. Okay. We had a softball team at work that I played on. I was playing tennis with my friends from work. We would go out. It was a nice social life. And I was feeling, for the first time in my life, completely self-contained. And so at that point, I met Jeff. This is how we met. My college roommate, Nancy, was from Scarsdale. And she was... I think she was living and working in the city, but she still had friends and family in Scarsdale. And it was going to be New Year's Eve, and I wanted to go to a party in White Plains at some friends, a college friend's house, and Nancy wanted to go to her friend's cousin's party in Scarsdale, and she said there were going to be some people there. I guess her friend's cousin worked on Wall Street. And I said, so I went under protest. I said, I do not want to be at a party with a whole bunch of Wall Street Republicans. I went under protest and I said, I was just going to wait until we went to the second party. And while I was waiting, I met Jeff at the buffet table. We were standing next to each other. And he was adorable. And we started talking, and that was it. We talked for the entire rest of the night. Never went to the second party. Had a little champagne toast at midnight. And that was it. I mean, I really knew, like, right then that he was the one. Then... interestingly, he asked me that night if I wanted to come to Cooperstown with him, because he had a couple of days off of work and he was driving up to Cooperstown, and I said no. I said, I don't know you. I'm not going to get in a car and travel with you. So about 2 weeks later, he got back and called me, and we went out for our first date, which was, we met at the information booth in Grand Central, right by the clock. Mm-hmm. And we went to the Museum of Modern Art, and we went to a Knicks game, and we went out for barbecue, and it's that's it's been him ever since. So that was New Year's Eve. It was when the year turned to 86.
Okay. So tell me about a little bit about your kids, because I know you have three of them.
I have three boys. Mm-hmm. Our oldest is Nate. He's 25. He has special needs, high functioning autistic. And he's probably a whole story in himself. Getting him diagnosed, realizing something was wrong with him, how he affected our relationship and the family, which in a nutshell was, instead of us flying apart, he brought everybody closer together. He's 25. He lives at home with us. He is an artist, and he's had exhibits, and he sells his art, and he's an absolute joy. He keeps improving developmentally, which is a big surprise to me. I always thought maybe he would hit puberty and sort of stop developing, and he hasn't. So he continues to communicate better with us, and he just sort of completes the family. He's so integral to who we are. And the other thing about Nate is he's absolutely a barometer of how I judge people. I look at how people are reacting to him, and it helps me understand a lot about what type of person they are. So he's our oldest. He was born in 1990 when we lived out in Illinois. Actually, all the boys were born in Illinois. They were all born at Highland Park Hospital. Robbie is our middle son. He is 22, going to be 23 in January. He is a naturalist. He loves animals. He always has loved animals. And he's a senior at Oswego studying zoology. He spent a year in Brazil on exchange. He's got an adventurous spirit and a sweet, sweet soul. Then Joey is the baby. He's Jeff?
Almost 20.
He's 19, going to be 20 December 14th. Thank you. He's definitely got a lot of artist in him too. He studies cinema studies. He likes film, but he's an amazing musician, and one of his gifts is kind of like noticing everything and seeing the whole picture. Bye. See you later. And he's at SUNY Purchase, which is like the art school of the SUNYs. And they're just amazing, amazing people. So, do you want me to tell you more about the boys? Anything specific you want to know about them?
Let's start with Nate. Tell me a little more about Nate and learning about your son and how to help him as much as you can.
Do you want to hear about when we first noticed that something was wrong with him? Do you want to go back to that?
Let's start there, yeah.
It's a good place to start. So he was our first kid, and neither Jeff nor I had really any experience with kids, babies, anything like that. We were both working. I worked up until the day I had Nate. It wasn't like kid centric. Oh, sorry. That's okay. I'm not going to answer.
Okay.
We were not in a kid centric world. We were, we were in a work world. Mm-hmm. And the only kids we knew were, we had a niece and nephew who we would go and play with once in a while, but not really you know, our friends weren't really starting to have kids yet, or anyway, we didn't know about kids. And then we had Nate, and he developed normally up until he was, I don't know, maybe 18 months. And at that point, Jeff and I noticed some things, and I went to the pediatrician regularly, and I asked the pediatrician, he's not doing these communication, he's not like meeting these milestones, and the doctor said not to worry about it. So, at the same time, we could tell that he was brilliant. Nate was brilliant. He could talk, but it was recitation. He didn't really interact, but he would do things even at this young age, like put things in alphabetical order. He would take the magnetic letters and numbers on the fridge and spell things out. And he was doing things that were beyond what the other kids in his playgroup were doing. And so we knew he was brilliant, but we also worried about the milestones he wasn't reaching. And then I think it was, I used to say, well, as long as he's happy. But he started to really tantrum a lot, and he wasn't happy because he couldn't express himself. So things sort of happened all at once. We had Robbie, and one day I said, Nate cries more than the baby. And at the same time, my mom, back in Schenectady, read an article in her local paper about a little boy with hyperlexia. Hyperlexia is a form of autism. And the newspaper article gave a little bullet list of what hyperlexia looks like. Precocious ability to read, lack of social interaction, a whole list. And so my mom called me up and said, I read about this little boy and he reminds me of Nate. And she said, I know you don't like me to tell you how to parent, but I was desperate. And I said, send me the article. And in the article, the little boy had been helped by this place called the Center for Speech and Language Disorders, located in Elmhurst, Illinois, 20 minutes down the highway from us. So so I called the center. I started calling like early one morning. I called one day and left a message there were two co-founders. One of them was in the Schenectady Gazette article, and she was the one I called first, left a message for her. She never returned my call. And by that point, I was really frantic. Something's wrong with my boy. The next morning, having not heard back from the co-founder, I started calling the center at 7 a.m. And the other co-founder answered the phone. And I talked to her about Nate, and she said, yep, you've got one. And I said, can you help? And she said, yeah. And that was just, the best thing to hear. We started going down twice a week. And she did. She helped. Her name was Phyllis Kupperman. And she became like a second mother to me. And that there was someone in the world who could tell us what was wrong with Nate and how to address it, and to who understood it enough to be able to predict what the next steps would be, was sort of beyond words. It was the most amazing thing in the world to have that. And the worst part of Nate and his disability was not knowing what was wrong with him. Once we found out, Jeff and I just kind of like, you know, hooked arms and said, okay, we know what's wrong with him. Let's do everything we can to fix it. And it was an interesting process, because Nate's ability to read became how we reached him. Phyllis said, buy pads and pads of paper, because you're going to be writing everything down. And we scripted everything for him. It was overwhelming to think that we were going to have to script every single thing for this little kid. But the more he understood, the less we had to write for him. Do you know? Mm-hmm. So we started out by writing down, when someone asks you, what is your name? You say, my name is Nate. And that's how he learned to interact and to talk. There were still many, many things that he didn't understand. It was as if English was a foreign language. He understood it when he read it, when he could slow things down. Do you speak a foreign language?
Mm-hmm. German.
So when you're in Germany and the words are coming at you very quickly, you can pick out, well, I think they're talking about a restaurant, and I think they're saying this, but you really don't get all the nuances. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you miss the meaning completely. That's how Nate was with English. So, and then when you read German, you're able to slow it down and you understand it much better, right? Mm-hmm. So that's how it was with Nate. So the things that he didn't understand, the things that were traumatic for him, like transitions and things like that, we would just try to anticipate everything, write down lists, a lot of written schedules, so nothing surprised him. A lot of written a lot of checklists, like when he did a good job on things, you know, reward charts, things like that. That's how we reached him. That and cookbooks. Do you see that shelf of cookbooks? Those are all kids' cookbooks. Nate loved cookbooks, still does, and loved to cook, still does. And so he would bring me a cookbook, and that would be how we would interact. I would say, oh, you want to make something from the cookbook? What do you want to make? Use your words. Tell me what you want to make. And it would be a whole, I mean, it's a force to be interactive. Okay, so we're going to double this recipe. So instead of one cup, how many cups are we going to use? And the reward is, you know, a cake or whatever recipe we were working on. So, little Nate standing on a stool next to me at the kitchen counter is a very, very happy memory.
I'm sure. How did he handle having little brothers? Because that's often a big change in families. So how did he handle that?
I think he hated it because he's very... he's really sensitive in terms of tactile things and the way things smell and stuff like that. So these little people showed up wearing stinky diapers, and it was really hard for him. Once they grew out of diapers, he loved them. But when they were stinky little people, he just had a hard time tolerating them. I have often said that his brothers were the best thing for him in terms of social interaction because they were in his face and he couldn't avoid them. And they forced him to interact. So that's I mean, he loves his brothers. He is crazy about them.
How about the transition to school? Because that's another big transition in a kid's life.
Well, he started school early. He started school early because we had trouble keeping him in a preschool. I actually have trouble talking about this. This was a really painful time to, I was trying to find a preschool that would accept Nate. And I tried one, and I was told that there was a mom who said, I don't want him drooling on my kid or something. I mean, just something like so horribly not accurate and hurtful. I tried a couple of preschools. He was asked to leave a couple of preschools. That was horrible. And then I found out that the school district accommodates for kids with special needs, and that there are special classes for preschool age kids. So Nate went into one of those, and it was great, and he loved it. So he was a little kid, and he was in this little class in our school district of kids with special needs, and it was pretty much a one-on-one atmosphere. I think there were six kids in the classroom. And there was one teacher and maybe four or five aides. So, I mean, it was phenomenal. And that's what he needed. And so he loved school. And he loved learning. And he still talks now about some of the things that he learned. Because they taught him with the ABA, it's a behavioral way of teaching kids. He had no choice but to learn, and it was fantastic. So he learned how to be in a classroom, how to be with other kids. And then from there, that was preschool. And from there, he went to a very specialized small classroom that was really heavy on behavioral teaching. It was in another district. He had to take the bus there, but it was also just perfect placement for him. And then when he was in, the heavy duty behavioral classroom, that was kindergarten and first grade. Second grade, the school district said they were ready to bring him into the classroom and to be mainstreamed. And I was terrified. And I said, I don't think this is right. You know, I don't think he's ready. And I mean, he really had so many social failings at that point. And I said, he's going to take away from the other kids. And I still had, you know, stress from him being asked to leave preschool. So I really was a little gun shy about that whole situation. But everyone from the principal down to the special ed teachers said, no, this is where he needs to be. We want him back in the district. And again, phenomenal, phenomenal. The school district really understood Nate and